Welcome back to the Office 365 Jumpstart for Small Business Administration. I'm Steve Hall. This is Chris Oakman.
Welcome. I wanted to answer a question from our last module, SharePoint, before we got into our next module. Somebody asked, is there a way to use a vanity domain to get to your intranet sites in SharePoint? And it's not. You need to make sure and choose the domain that you use for that on Microsoft.com when you initially set up your Office 365 tenant. You want to make sure that you choose wisely, and you use something that that represents your company. Usually, it's the domain of your company, Eastridge or DistrictComputers.onMicrosoft.com. But if for some reason that's not available, you need to make sure that you choose that wisely, because it does follow you through to your SharePoint site, and that's how your employees will be accessing SharePoint internally.
When you set up the DNS, when you declare your domain, it asks you, what is the intent of this domain?
Right.
You can say it's for Exchange. You can say it's for Link. And it says if you're going to use it for SharePoint and use a vanity URL, there are some things you can
do. You can.
Yep. But you have to declare it at the initial setup
right.
of that
and
domain.
If you declare that vanity URL for SharePoint, then you cannot use it for Exchange and Link. So, for internal use, it's going to be for the way you're internally going to access SharePoint online is going to be typically through domain.onmicrosoft.com. Just want to clear that up. So on with the next module.
On to module 6, Exchange Online Basic Management. This is the beginning of the remainder of the Jumpstart, which is all Exchange from here on out. Exchange is like the engine that powers the Office 365. It's the communications engine that really powers the world, if you ask me.
Yep.
Let's get right into it. So the next four modules, starting with this one, are all into Exchange. Exchange management, deployment, migration, security, and then the actual compliance and archiving. Of course, there's a meal break in between.
Right.
So what exactly is Exchange? What is the service overview? What are some of the new features? Why are we so, jacked up over Exchange? We love Exchange.
We do love Exchange.
We've lived off of Exchange for years. So,
yeah.
Exchange is the world's leading email server. Exchange Online is supported and maintained by the actual engineers that create Exchange. And it's been years of investment in email and technologies that have brought Exchange to its current version. And that's really the investment and backing that Office 365 is on. Exchange Online is true Exchange. It's the familiar interface. It's robust. It's secure. And it's powerful. We can jump right in so you guys can view what I'm viewing now. So Exchange Online allows you to, remain in control online and on-premise. And that's the beauty of Exchange Online. The fact that you can be federated and have on-premise users, you can have cloud users. The management does not change whether you're on the cloud or you're on-premise. You can connect from a plethora of devices. We can control those devices. You can control your data that belongs to your organization, pretty much no matter what device people connect from. And we'll get into how that's done. And your information remains safe. It's very secure, and the security options and compliance options, the ability to lock down your data and your users are better than ever. So what's included with Exchange Online? Obviously, it's the business email. It's the calendaring, the contacts, everything that we've had in Exchange has just gotten better. It can work on your PC, your phone, your web browser, your Mac, if you're a Mac user, it's supported for many mail clients. Pretty much any device you can use, any real business ready device should support Exchange currently. Exchange Online is powered by globally redundant, geo-redundant servers, protected by anti-malware and anti-spam filtering, and it's supported by 365 IT level phone support. Huge mailboxes, 25 gigabyte mailboxes are available per user. Those are huge. Even shared mailboxes get 5 gigabytes. The ability to send messages up to 25 megs in size, I believe, is that still 25 megs? Outlook support, Outlook web app, those are native, as well as other mail clients. And the Outlook web app has been heavily updated. It's definitely secure and reliable. You maintain the latest defenses. The new data loss prevention features are really powerful. You can protect particular information if you want to protect credit card information, if you don't want to allow anybody on your domain or your your network to send out credit card information, you can put a filter in the DLP settings and say, okay, well, we're going to flag that. We're going to notify you, first and foremost, that you can't send a message that has credit card information. And we're not going to let that message send. It's a really easy setting, very powerful, protects your users, protects your information. You know, safeguarding your data, and it's reliable. It's
and you can create filters on other things. So if there's specific documents in your organization that you don't ever want to leave your organization, you can create a DLP around those documents so that they cannot be sent out as attachments or
And just like anything else with Office 365, it's that financially backed to 99.9 uptime guarantee.
Yep.
And that's across all products in Office or services in Office 365. You know, Microsoft has put their money where their mouth is, and they said this is going to be the best service, and we're going to back it financially.
Yep.
So, what do we have here now? I'm showing right here in the example. I'll get a laser pointer again. This is what a DLP message looks like. If a user in our case is trying to send credit card information, they're going to get a policy tip that pops up. This message may contain sensitive information, and all recipients must be authorized to send this kind of content. So this user probably is not able to send this message because it has a Visa card number right here.
Yep.
That message has been picked off by the data loss prevention, and that message is going nowhere. We can also say send an email to an administrator to let them know that somebody's trying to send this email out. As far as the demos go, we're going to do the demos at the end. We're just going to go through a lot of this information. I'm not going to sit here and read through them. I'm going to highlight certain information in these decks. All of it's important, but we're going to highlight a lot of the new features within Exchange and some of the most powerful features that are common for small businesses to use. Managing your organization. In-place e-discovery. Mobile device policies and the phone support. To be able to lock down devices. People connect with all kinds of devices. It could be Windows devices. It could be Windows 8 tablets, it could be iOS devices, it could be Android devices, and different devices and different versions of software support different policies. And you can create policies to lock down what's available, what devices can connect, and if somebody is to lose a device, you can have the ability to wipe that device, do a factory reset even. Here we're showing, we're trying to show the in-place e-discovery. This actually is across a SharePoint site. I believe that we talked about this in the SharePoint module, but the Exchange engine is on the back end of that, and that's why we're able to do the actual e-discovery on that SharePoint data.
Yep.
Simple to use, simple to maintain. You know, because it's a cloud service and it's part of the Office 365 service, the patching and updating is done by Microsoft. It's, you know, less work for the IT admins to have to do from that perspective. We're able to see, as Chris showed us in the first module, we're able to see from that dashboard what's going on. You know, when is maintenance going to be planned? If something did go wrong, we can see what's going on and get information. We can always create a service ticket to find out, or we can call in for support. All of our information is kept in one place. They have the new in-place or online archiving, which is was new in, I believe, Exchange 2010. But the ability to have our archive data available to us, even in Outlook web app. We don't have to have that archive, that PST file, local to just a computer. And we can have with the E3 plans and up, or the enterprise email exchange plan 2, I believe, mm-hmm. We're allowed to have basically unlimited size mailboxes. It's 25 gigabytes in the primary mailbox, but an unlimited archive. So, and that's really powerful. So if you have users that exceed that 25 gigs, you can enable that online archive, which you'll be showing in a later module, and people's data can, you know, your mailbox size can continue to grow and grow and grow beyond that 25 gig limit. Seamless integration with Outlook and a consistent, secure anywhere access. So I'm showing here the ability to connect the Outlook web app and the fact that, you know, you can work across Outlook web app or you can work across Outlook, and it's a consistent experience no matter where you work. If you don't have the Outlook client and you just have the webmail, that's an incredible client. You can do almost everything there. Not everything, but most things you can do. So enterprise class calendaring. I'm going to highlight some things here. You can have multiple calendars, your calendar. You can have as many calendars for yourself. You can share calendars. You can view your teammates' calendars. You can view outside users' calendars if you have that enabled. You can have SharePoint calendars that are tied back into SharePoint, but you may just want to work out of Outlook. All that's powered by Exchange. You can see, it's hard to see this picture right here, but when you're scheduling, you can see scheduling conflicts between yourself and other persons or mailboxes, what's available, what's not available. We'll get to that when we actually do the demos. You can control out of office, your resource mailboxes, and your granular calendar permissions. I mean, it's really powerful stuff, and it's really easy to use. As an administrator, we get to go in and enable and set the policies that users get to do, but this is the user's end, and we get to set it on the back end as administrators. It's really easy to do, and we're going to hopefully show you in the next 30 minutes of this session and the next three sessions how it's done and make you a perfect administrator yourself. If you happen to have the Enterprise Voice Plan, you have the ability to have the hosted voicemail. So Exchange Online, your mailbox will take on that functionality, where if you have that that voice functionality built in, or the Enterprise Voice, you can get your email, not only just email to you as an attachment, it's saved in your mailbox and it can be transcribed to you as an email.
Right.
Where you can literally click on it and listen to it. You can see who called, you can see what their title was, and you can click on a link and call them right back if you happen to have that functionality. Your auto attendant is powered through your unified messaging. Your voicemail is powered through that, so it's all part of, built into the Exchange. So what are the different plans, and what do we get with each plan? The Enterprise Kiosk. Sorry, the Exchange Online Kiosk, which is just a webmail, sorry, OWA only, plus mobile phone user, gets a 1 gigabyte mailbox. And they get, what are the big things that are missing? You can't connect to Outlook.
Right. No IMAP.
No IMAP. You can pop and you can use the Exchange ActiveSync, which is huge, though. Yeah. So you may have a user that might not have a full-time PC. They don't get that much email, but they have a smartphone. They have a Windows phone, an iOS phone, Android phone, and they need to connect, or a device. So they can. This would be a perfect plan for them.
Yep.
Webmail or Exchange ActiveSync. Your Exchange Online Plan 1 and Plan 2, and this just shows that they're what plans they're included with. 25 gigabytes of mail. The big differences in these two are the litigation hold functions, the voicemail functions, so if you look at this bottom section, and the personal archive, the unlimited archiving versus the 25 gig limit. So those are the major differences in the two. So that's why it says right here, mailbox size is unlimited. It's a 25 gig mailbox plus unlimited archiving if you enable that function. And I assume we'll get some questions about that. You'll be seeing that, how to set that up as we go through. What are the system requirements to run the OWA? Most browsers are supported, or the client, and the latest versions of the browsers are pretty much required. Pretty much all the browsers are the common browsers now, even XP with Service Pack 2 or Service Pack 3, depending if you have 32 or 64-bit. Of course, end of life is coming and on April 8th of 2014, and I know we were asked in the previous modules, will XP still work? The web browser and XP will certainly still work. It's just that if you call them for support, you probably won't get it because it will be an unsupported platform at that point. Same thing if you use a browser not supported. The Office clients, you can look over these yourself to see what Office clients are supported by what. Visibility and control. What does it look like actually controlling Exchange Online? So we have the actual Exchange Admin Center, which is inside the Office 365 Admin Center. And what does it give us? It's role-based access control, and you can use Windows PowerShell to drive, so you can use the online portal, you can use the PowerShell, you can use any of these browsers to connect to the actual online portal. Sorry about that. Our good friend PowerShell is still around. Mm-hmm. You can do a lot of granular control through PowerShell. You don't have to use PowerShell. You can do a lot of these things without PowerShell. It's just that if you're going to be doing things in bulk, you may want to learn the PowerShell commandlets, or some of them, to be able to do things faster. There are also some great third-party tools that allow you to automate PowerShell scripts. You can go out and find those in the marketplace, Office 365 marketplace. The user self-service. Users can also go in and make some settings themselves through OWA, so you can enable, as an administrator, users to be able to do some things, which will alleviate the burden of administration for yourself. What are some of the things we can do, or how do we actually... From the Office 365 Admin Center itself, you can do some basic administration. You can simply assign a license. If you by assigning an online Exchange license to a user, the mailbox automatically creates.
Yep.
If you take that license away, the mailbox automatically deletes.
It's gone.
It's gone. Finito. It'll be a pop-up, I believe, that tells you, are you sure that you want to do this? I believe I have that right here. Oh, no, I don't. So... That's the most basic of management, and that's done right in the Office 365 Admin Center itself. So when you dig in or drive it into the Exchange Admin Center, you can actually have a lot of granular control. This is the actual Exchange 2013 admin. It's the exact same portal. Yep. It's the RBAC aware user interface, meaning that, you know, different roles have different permissions. You can access it through the 365 Admin Center. And I'm not quite sure why my demo right here didn't. It's supposed to be a click through, but when we get to the demo at the end, we'll actually drive right through. Yeah. But this just shows, hey, with this person, Arlene Huff, for example, I can change her general settings. I can go check her mailbox usage. I can check her contact information, and we'll get into that as we. Oh, good, it is working. From here, I can search for properties for a particular user. When I pull the user up, I can search by alias. I can search by display name. I can search, so if I'm trying to find a mailbox and I have a lot, I can search by different key indicators to pull up a mailbox or pull up a user. I can conduct an advanced search. Under permissions, I can actually go in and set permissions for a particular user or for our entire domain. Compliance. This is going to be covered, I believe, in the last module.
Yep.
But this is where I can create policies. I can create retention policies, data loss prevention, like we talked about with the credit card. It's all done right here. Auditing, in-place discovery and hold. If I have to place somebody on litigation hold, that's done right here. Mail flow. If we need to create mail flow rules or we need to see what's going on, we go right into mail flow and we sit in and we can select users or we can actually create mail flow rules. Delivery reports, accepted domains, email policies, all of that's under mail flow. If we need to track messages, and tracking is done very simple right here. We can just do a report on is a message sent, was a message received by outside server.
Right.
PowerShell. So we're going to continue to talk about PowerShell as long as it's relevant. PowerShell is going to be relevant as long as until the GUI is, it's going to always be relevant, I'm assuming. When you want to manage bulk users, PowerShell is relevant. You don't have to use it, but you can. It comes in handy when you're trying to change passwords or properties on 20 or 200 users, trying to keep it in the small business space. If trying to change user properties one at a time for 200 users could take a long time. But if you can actually script that and drag and drop it, which hopefully we'll have time to show, and we showed a little bit in previous modules, that saves a lot of time, and it really allows you to do your administration jobs a lot faster. User self-service. This is where you can enable users in LWA to actually help themselves with some things. You can reduce help desk calls, allowing users to modify their own contact details, to enable them to create their own distribution groups, really to empower them to track their own messages. You know, that's things that used to be requests of an admin. I can't tell you how many times I've answered a call. Can you track to see if this message was delivered? Or I'm sure you've been asked, Chris, to create distribution lists.
Yep.
And now that users can create those themselves, that really saves us a lot of time as administrators. This just shows sort of what Sarah can do here on the screen. She can go in and change her own contact information. So if she gets married, I believe that was a question we had in the previous model, changes her last name, she can do it herself right here. Groups, she can create her own distribution groups. And she can reset her voicemail pin if she has voicemail set there. She should also be able to change her password. And she can wipe, that's a big one. If a user loses their phone, they can go in and wipe their own device. That's pretty big because that's been a request that we've had to do as admins for a long time. Go in and kill a handheld or reset a connection. The user can do it from themselves right there. All right, so what does the EAC look like? The Exchange Admin Center. It's going to be called the EAC from here on out or a combination of EAC and Exchange Admin Center. On the left navigation pane, we actually have the permissions, the compliance, we have the organization settings, the protection settings, mail flow, mobile, public folders, if those are enabled, and unified messaging settings. Across the top, under recipients, we have the mailboxes, groups, resources, contacts, shared, and migration. Simple, clean interface. Easy to get to whatever you need to get to. As long as you're an administrator, there's no reason that you can't, you know, navigate this portal. It's easier than all the exchanges in the past. So what can we do under recipient management? I actually listed out pretty much all of the options you have here, all the relevant options. You can go in and check mailbox usage. I'm going to read some of the. I'm going to highlight some of the more common ones. You can go in and add email aliases or addresses. Mailbox features where you can set forward rules. You can set mail tips in here. You can actually do delegation. So I need access to the info mailbox, or I need to be able to send on behalf of somebody. That can be done right here under mailbox delegation. What types of under resource mailboxes, you know, what is a resource mailbox? That could be like a room or a projector. I need to know if the projector is available. We can give the projector its own mailbox, or we can check in to see, okay, is the projector available? Is the conference room available? Group mailboxes. And then, you know, what are group mailboxes? You know, well, they can have names. We can go in and manage group mailboxes. We can manage contacts, the differences in mail contacts and mail users, which we'll get to, and then shared mailboxes. So we can do all of that from the recipient management. Permissions. So this is where we actually have the admin roles and the user roles and the policies. So we can go ahead and create new admin roles within Exchange. So we can enable a power user within Exchange that can go in and do some things in the admin console, and we can have some user roles that can be created. So those are separate roles that are still RBAC aware, but they're roles just for Exchange management. The Outlook web app policies, we can go in and create policies that relate to the user's experience when they're using Outlook web app. We can enable certain features. We can disable certain features. So when you log into OWA, the user sees certain things or does not see certain things. We can enable and disable features. Other management we can do within the EAC, compliance, organization sharing, and apps. We can allow apps to be present in OWA. Exchange Online Protection, which is going to be its own module by itself. Mailflow, mobile, and we talked about the others. So I'm skipping through because we sort of highlighted those. So, mailboxes management. What does it look like? How do we do it? And I'm going to jump into this now. All right. Mailbox management. This is a user mailbox. This is obviously a standard mailbox. If I want to actually add email addresses, this is a Steve Austin, it looks like. And Steve Austin here, right now by default, is saustin@districtcomputers.com. If I want to check his email, I just click on the email addresses, and from here I can actually add an email, or take away an email, or edit an email. I want to give him an alias. And I click add, and I would be able to add, you know, steve.austin@districtcomputers.com, for example. If I want to change his permissions to give myself access to his mailbox, I would simply click on mailbox delegation. From here, I can give myself send as permissions on Steve or somebody else. I can get send on behalf of. So there is a difference in send as and send on behalf of. If I have send as permissions and I send an email, it'll come from Steve Austin. If I have send on behalf of, it'll come from me on behalf of him.
Yep.
And then I can give myself full access to his mailbox. So within my Outlook or within my OWA, I can access his mailbox, which is something that we as administrators have had to do for a long time. And in the previous version of Office 365, we had to do that by PowerShell. That's now able to be done right here. So management features within the mailbox, or mailbox features we can do. This is where we can enable phone and voice features if we have that. We can enable IMAP or POP or disable it if you don't want anybody connecting with those. You can assign what role the user belongs to. We can also enable archiving, which is, you know, the question is, how do I enable archiving? You simply drill down into that user, go down to mailbox features, and select enable under enable archiving. Sorry, let me just use my laser pointer again. So you can enable archiving right here. You can place a user on litigation hold right here. You can enable POP or disable POP or IMAP. They're right here. Mail flow settings, if you need to set forwarding rules, that's done right here. Message size restrictions, you don't want them to be able to send messages larger than a certain size, put that right there. And delivery restrictions, that's all done right here, really easy, right in your face. Groups, how easy is it to create a distribution group? What does it take? So I created a group called 74-325 demo, just for this demo. I put a display name of 74-325, I gave it an alias, all the starred features are required. You have to give it an email address. You can give it multiple email addresses, and you can say who the owners are. You can also allow the group owner to be a member. You can add additional group members, so for a distribution group. You can say the group is open or closed, and you can allow the group to be emailed from the inside or outside. So after I've created it and I want to go in and make some changes, I select the group. I'm in the properties now. I want to go to delegation to give myself or somebody else send as access or send on behalf of access for the group itself. It's treated just like any other mailbox. It's a mailbox. If I need to give message approval. So I want to make sure that anytime Chris or somebody sends an email to that group, I can approve it before the group sees it. or I can vice versa. Messages going out, I can approve, or I can leave that disabled. But that's something that can be done easily right here. Delivery management. I can say who can send to this group. Is it internal users? Is it external users? Can nobody send to it? I can set that right here. And email options. I need to give aliases, alias email addresses, or change the email address. It's done right here. Just add an email, remove that email, edit that email, make it an SMTP address, and you can add as many at your aliases that you have. Mail contacts. All right, so there are mail contacts and there are mail users. There are two different things, and a lot of people don't know that. It's been around for a while with Exchange. A mail contact themselves is an external contact that has an external email address. So if I wanted Chris Oakman to appear in the global address list for District Computers, I would add Chris Oakman as a mail contact. I would put his name here. I would put his display name as Chris Oakman so he'd appear in our gal. And then I would put his external email address. So therefore, I could just select him in our global address list. Now, a mail user is similar but different than a mail contact. It's a user that does not have an Exchange mailbox but is part of our organization. So it could be somebody that's using SharePoint or Link, but they don't have a mailbox. They have an external mailbox. They could have a Outlook.com address instead of a DistroComputers.com address, but they could be using us for Link, or we could be using them as a Link user or a SharePoint user. Very important. How do you add that? You simply create a mail user, put their information in. They still have a login with DistroComputers or whatever your domain is, but you have to put their external email address here. They have a login and a password. Resources. These mailboxes, an equipment mailbox or a room mailbox, is created the same way as any other mailbox. Does not require a license. And I'm just going through here how you create it. You give the mailbox a name and an email address. And then you can say, okay, well, if this is a room, this is an equipment mailbox, you can say, okay, well, how many does it require booking? Who can book the room?
Right.
Put that right here. And with the equipment mailbox. And with the room mailbox, same properties, except you get to choose how many people can go in the room.
Yeah. Now, there is a limit to the number of days you can reserve a room mailbox or an equipment mailbox. So that can be an issue. So if you, every Tuesday at 3 o'clock, you have a meeting in a conference room, you've booked that room, you need to make sure that you update that every couple weeks. So just going to throw that out there.
And it's a big thing that people, a lot of small businesses don't use it, but they have that feature to be able to reserve equipment. I mean, for example, I use a projector or a laptop. Is that laptop available? Instead of having to call, you know, Susie at the front desk, you can just have that piece of equipment have its own mailbox and use it as a calendar. Is it available? Is it not available? Check it out. So then there are the shared mailboxes. This is really important. I can't stress the importance of this enough. So shared mailboxes. People often get confused when they sign up for Office 365 or Exchange Online because they're a 10-user business that happens to have an info account, a sales account, a customer service account, a support account, a I don't know account. You know, that's 10 users. It makes it 15, which the cost goes up.
Right.
But the reality is they can make each one of those a shared mailbox. There are some limitations, but they're free.
Right.
Does not require a license, but it can't exceed 5 gigabytes. Cannot enable archiving. Cannot be placed on litigation hold. If you need to, you know, use those features, you will have to license that mailbox. Now, if you can create a regular mailbox and then turn it into a shared mailbox, we'll show that. I'll show that in PowerPoint. Sorry, PowerShell.
We're in PowerPoint.
And you can take a shared mailbox and license it and turn it into a full-blown mailbox. I'm going to go back to this again because I want you guys to know everything in here. And you must know the limitations on what can and cannot be done with the shared mailbox. That is a very commonly asked question in the community. So how do I create a shared mailbox just like any other mailbox? You have to give it a display name and all the properties of a regular mailbox. It's all done from that recipient mailbox screen. I'm going to demo this at the end instead of right now just because I've been having some difficulty switching back and forth to the demos. Yep. So what is the command to convert a regular mailbox into a shared mailbox? Know this command.
Yep.
It's not the most important thing, and you may never do it, but it's just good to know, and it'll save you from looking it up online. It's right here. And basically, you have to get the mailbox, the name of the mailbox, whatever it is, and then set the mailbox type to shared. Mm-hmm. Now, it better have less than 5 gigs of mail in it, Otherwise, you may have some difficulty with that. And I was going to demo that. I'll demo that at the end. Mobile device management. Huge. With all the BYOD nowadays and bring your own device, everybody is has some variety of mobile devices. How do I manage that? How do I keep my data safe from all these roaming devices and users that may or may not belong to my organization or may use their own personal devices? What can we do? We can quarantine, allow, or block connectivity to devices based on the type of device, the family, and the model. We can also set criteria for devices to be able to connect to the servers. Some of the requirements, like minimum password length, require a special number of characters, designate how long a device can be inactive, and wipe a device if it's failed logging in multiple times. And that means a factory reset wipe, like a wipe.
Right. Somebody asked if you can prevent a user from wiping their phone.
I can turn that feature off.
Yes.
So you can turn that feature off, then it won't appear. Back to the OWA policies. When I set OWA policies or you set OWA policies, you can enable the user to wipe their handheld, or you can take that out. So if that's not there, they won't have that as an option.
Right.
Of course, you can't stop them from grabbing their phone, enabling it, and doing it manually.
Right.
But that's a whole different thing. In the mobile device management, so here's where it's done. Under Exchange Admin Center, on the left navigation pane, you select mobile. From here, you have two simple options, mobile device access and mobile device policies. So what happens when we want to create a device access rule? New device access rule pops up. I wanted to select all Windows Phone 8 devices. So I select that as the device family, and I selected all models. And I'm going to allow access to all Windows Phone 8 devices. If for some reason I don't want to allow Windows Phone 8 devices to connect, I would simply change that to block, or I would change that to quarantine, which would then allow me, as the admin, to determine what to do later. But it would quarantine all those devices and keep them in quarantine until I decided what the actual action is. Really powerful, really easy. So I created a test policy under the mobile device policies. Under here, you can go in and edit, or you can add a new policy. So I created a 74-325 demo policy just for this, just for you guys. And I said this is going to be our default policy. I'm going to require a password. I'm going to require an alphanumeric password that must include at least three character sets, meaning upper-lower number or upper-lower number symbol. It has to be three unique character sets. I'm going to require a device encryption. I'm going to require a minimum password length of six characters, requiring if they miss that sign-in six times in a row, that device gets automatically wiped. I've put that policy in effect. Require that after 7 minutes of inactivity, the device does lock.
Right.
And I'm going to require a new password every 90 days, or require the password memorization for 90 days. And I'm going to make you change your password 50 times before you can use the same password again.
Sounds good.
I might not be that popular of a guy at that company, but troubleshooting connectivity. All right. So there are some great tools online, and. The Remote Connectivity Analyzer is a great, 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 great website. Know that URL. It is simple. https://testexchangeconnectivity.com. From there, you can actually perform the following tests versus your Exchange server or versus Exchange online. It tells you right here what's tested, what works. Are your DNS rules even set up correctly? Outlook Anywhere working, and here's the reference on what that tool does. That is a phenomenal tool to use for testing connectivity issues. If you can't connect with Outlook and you can connect with OWA or whatever it may be, use that first, then call support second, because it may save you a lot of time. There's also the Connectivity Analyzer tool, which works hand-in-hand with that, but this is a downloadable tool. So you can download this and run this on the actual client machine that's having trouble. And it'll tell you, hey, from this client, I can't connect to the Exchange online because of X, Y, and Z. It's the companion tool to the Remote Connectivity Analyzer site, and it identifies, connectivity issues between the clients and Office 365 Exchange online. There is a great video right here that actually shows how the tool works and also the web reference. Incredible tool, easy to use. I advise you watch that video. It's a couple of minute video that shows you how it's used. Use it, even if you have an on-premise Exchange server, you can use these tools. Now, I have the resource page blank right here. It'll be populated by the time you guys get there. I'm going to switch now to demos, and Chris is going to answer a question or two while I'm doing this.
Sure, sounds good. Let's see what we got here. Are full access permissions required to perform e-discovery? No, you can assign, and we're going to go over that later. You can assign permissions to just that user to perform just e-discovery permissions.
We'll answer a few while we're sitting
here. Yeah, I'm ready. Absolutely. Let's see.
Or can you?
Can you prevent user phone wipes from there? Yes, you can prevent a user from wiping their phone. Let's see. I don't have a whole lot that haven't been
answered. A mail user could also use Hotmail, Yahoo, or another non-corporate email. Yes. Yep. It's an external email.
Right.
So it doesn't matter. As long as it's a valid SMTP address, it could be any address. Mail user, mail contact. It's an external user. All right, external email address. Sorry. I don't see a checkbox for following or for creating these policies. All right, I'm going to go through some of this live right now. I'm going to actually jump right into the actual Exchange Admin Center. So from here,
We're good?
Yeah, we're good. Okay. I've been ready. Okay. I just wanted to go through some questions while we were doing it.
Great.
So we're actually in the Exchange Office 365 Admin Center here. We've seen the screen multiple times. Obviously, under Users and Groups, we're going to go pick on a user, Alan this time. And if we want to make sure, you know what, I'm going to do this, and we're going to see what happens. If I want to do basic administration, Alan has left our company. I uncheck that box. And it's going to tell me, hey, removing this license may delete their link contact, but it also should be removing their mailbox. And it's not telling me. Alan no longer has a mailbox in our organization. It may take a few minutes to propagate, but Alan's mailbox will be gone.
Yep.
All right, so just as easy as that. Of course, we like Alan, and he got rehired momentarily after he got fired. So we want to give him his mailbox back. We're going to check that again. And however, I do believe that unless I go in and do a recovery.
You have to go do a recovery.
His messages are gone.
Right.
Assuming that it was all done correctly.
Right.
So that's what we can do from the actual Office 365 Admin Center by itself. But if I want to get more granular, I simply go to Admin, Exchange, and now I'm in the Exchange Admin Center, or I will be in a moment. All right. Now we can do some mailbox management. Before I do that, Alan's mailbox is here. That's because I should have left it and let it delete. And we may delete it and bring it back later.
Mm-hmm.
So once again, I went through all this in the slides, but I wanted to show you guys live. We're just going to do recipient mailboxes right now, and then because compliance we're going to get to in the 9th module, the protection we get to in the 8th module, and we cover mail flow and some other things actually here. But I am going to get to mobile device access, and I'm going to get to recipients now. So we're going to pick on, we already picked on Alan, we'll pick on Dan Jump, the CEO. So we see right here, that by selecting Dan Jump, on the right side, it gives me a snapshot view of sort of who Dan is and what's going on. He has a regular user mailbox. He's Dan J at the Office 365 demo at allmicrosoft.com. He is the CEO. He hasn't been a good end user and updated his own contact information, so he doesn't have his phone numbers in here. I have him disabled for unified messaging because we don't have unified messaging enabled. He does not have archiving enabled. That might be an issue. Sorry. His archiving is enabled. If it wasn't enabled, it would look like this. So right now, his archiving is disabled. By default, your archiving is disabled.
Correct.
You need to go in and enable the online archiving, but you want to set a default policy for archiving also. So I've now enabled his online archiving. I can do that all from this view right here. Email connectivity. I can actually kill his Outlook web app functionality. So if I change this, he will not be able to log into OWA. Why? I don't know, but I could actually do that.
Mm-hmm.
I can do a lot more editing if I just select his name and go into edit. First and foremost, I can actually give him a phone number under general. But I'm not going to change anything in here. I can actually see when he last logged in. He logged in a month ago almost and on the 15th at 3:28. He's using a whopping 10.58 megabytes out of his 24.75 gigabytes. usable. So he's using 0% of his email. This will fill up and I can check that. I could also run a script to give me a report showing how much mail has been used across all of my users. This is a thing that if I need to just get a report and I have 5 users, it might not take any time to go click on them one at a time. But if I need to get a report for everybody, I could run a PowerShell script and say, give me that information. Where are we across the company? Some great things we can do here. We can give them an alias email address. Let's go ahead and do that now. I went to email addresses. Boom. An SMTP address. DJ at theoffice365demo.com. And I could make this my default address or not. I won't. I'll just add this address. I can do some mailbox features. He's the CEO and he doesn't have time to check his email. He may have hired, first of all, I can put him on litigation hold from here by enabling that. I can, his archiving is created. He's archiving 0% because he hasn't met the archiving criteria. I could forward all of his messages. I want to make sure that every message he gets forwarded to, let's say, Casey here, Cassie. And I'm going to also make sure a message stays there. I've just forwarded all of his messages. I can set some delivery restrictions on him, and I can do some delegation. I want to make sure that his assistant, who we're going to say is, in this case, his assistant is Amy, who we picked on previously. She now has send as rights on it for his mailbox, and she also is going to have full mailbox access to him. But he may say, I don't want her to send as me. I want her to send on behalf of me, just so I know that, you know, that message was sent, but it wasn't sent actually by me. So in this case, we actually gave Amy send on behalf of access to his mailbox as well as full access to his mailbox. Save that, and that's done. I'm going to jump right into shared mailboxes because this is a pretty big one. From the shared mailboxes console, I can create a shared mailbox. I could not do this previously.
Right.
And the GUI. I had it require PowerShell or a call to a, I believe PowerShell or a call to Microsoft support. So we're going to make it info mailbox. No, we're going to make a sales info mailbox just in case. And that's the display name. I have to give it an email address, salesinfo@theoffice365demo.com. And I'm going to give Carlos, our good friend Carlos here, has full access to that mailbox, and he can also send on behalf of that mailbox.
And this all had to be done through PowerShell before.
All this had to be done through PowerShell. So the fact that it can be done through the graphical user interface is huge, especially for businesses that want to be self-serving or some of us IT admins that want simple administration. It makes things easier. We like easy. Come on. So while I'm waiting on that, I can jump into contacts. This is where I can answer that question about mail contacts. I'm going to create a mail contact. Steve, ignore that error. I actually have a lot going on with this demo environment right now. We're doing some customization on this one, and so a lot of things here may or may not work. I may go to my live environment if I have to. I'm going to put myself in this S Hall. Be my alias, and I'm going to use my steve@districtcomputers.com. And I should have added myself as a mail contact in this organization now. And there I am right there. So I'll appear in the global address list. We're going to jump down into mobile. I'm sure that there's going to be some things here. So let's say I'll see all of my quarantined devices first and foremost here. There are no devices quarantined, but I'm going to create a new device access rule. I want to block, let's say, I wanted to block, well, we can block all devices right now. What I would normally see here would be something like I can block iOS devices, and I was going to actually block all iPhones, but I guess those don't want to be blocked today, and in particular, a particular family of devices, and I could block or allow. Public folders, if we have public folders, we can create them here. We can manage them here. Unified messaging, we can add the unified messaging policies, the dial plans, the gateways. If we have the E4 plan, that's done right here. Since we're not focusing on that right now, we're not going to do much here. You'll see more about the mail flow, delivery reports, tracing, and accepted domains and later modules, as well as the protection. This is huge, this section right here. This is the Exchange Online Protection, which is all new. The organization sharing, I do want to say that right here is where I can enable free and busy calendaring information, allow that to be shared amongst the organization or to external people, as well as individual sharing, allow people to share their contacts and things. I can disable that. If you don't want your users to be able to share any information, that's done right here. The default is allow sharing to internal and external domains, but you can change that behavior right here. Apps, pretty new. OWA, you can actually publish apps in OWA. So you can allow things like LinkedIn connectivity.
Yep, LinkedIn, Facebook, and other apps.
Well, right now, let's see what's here now. Bing Maps is part of the OWA. Yep. It's Bing enabled Maps. For anybody. Suggested meetings are enabled. These are default Microsoft apps, but you can add more from the Office Store, from a custom URL, or from a file if you have some sideloading.
Yep.
You can go in and edit these, and it shows that they'll be available in your OWA or through Outlook. And I believe we'll check permissions. Any questions?
Yeah, someone asked real quick, how would Amy send on behalf of the CEO? So
excellent question.
Yeah.
So if Amy is, I believe I have Outlook on this machine.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember what my password is. since I'm being Karen Berg now.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm logging in as Karen Berg.
So we're going to make Karen, give Karen send on behalf.
And it may not propagate in time,
okay.
But I'm going to show how it's done. Okay. I believe I spelled that all right. All right, so Karen Berg, assuming I typed that right, is logging into this Outlook right now. And it's trying to connect. So how would I do it? I would go to new email. From after I've given Karen Berg rights,
mm-hmm.
I would then go to show the from. I would select the from, and I would say, in this case, Dan J. Or let's just look him up. Dan Jump. Okay. And I would send this message now, and it would show as sent on behalf of Dan Jump by Karen Berg.
Right.
Or if I had send as permissions, it would show sent as Dan Jump. But it would go by your permissions right there.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Let's see. You may be going over this later. Where can you configure global email signatures? We're going to go over that later.
That gets covered in compliance, right?
Yep. Let's see what else we have.
So here's one that was
asked. Assuming a contact can be hidden from the gal?
Yes,
absolutely.
Yes, definitely. So here's a question we had about, here's the OWA mailbox policy. So we were asked about, what's the question about OWA? I forgot what it was. But I'm actually going to edit the actual default policy.
Okay.
So I've gone back into permissions, and this is where I can assign admin roles and user roles. We can create roles for people. But under Outlook Web App Policies, this affects, obviously, the mobile connectivity as well as the OWA. Here's the general policy. I can allow instant messaging or text messaging. I can disable or enable, you know, LinkedIn. LinkedIn is baked in by default. I can enable the journaling. I can change the theme and the premium content. I can do a lot more. I can allow the task reminders and things like this. I can uncheck those, and it can affect everybody, or I can apply this to certain persons.
Okay.
File access, you know, this is where we can enable file access or offline access. It's really the control of what our users get to see, and we can do it all from one simple control panel.
Okay. Somebody asked, can you add multiple contacts at once into the organization, or you have to add them individually? You can add them through PowerShell.
So you can definitely bulk add. You can bulk add an entire global address list through PowerShell.
Yep.
I believe that covers the surface of the basic management. For Office 365, I mean for Exchange Online, the next three modules will drill down into the deployment and migration, followed by the security and protection,
mm-hmm.
followed by the compliance and things like e-discovery and archiving. So yeah. We can answer a few more questions.
Yeah, let's do that. I've got one more. Under what scenario would I use Exchange in the office or Exchange on-prem if I'm already using Office 365? So a couple of different scenarios for that. Maybe you have 100 internal users and a sales force that's external. So we want those sales and not a great internet connection. So maybe we want that sales force to be able to get to their email all the time, no matter what. so
line, business applications.
Line of business applications that need an exchange on premise could be another one. There's a lot of different scenarios where you might need both.
You might need
a combination.
Larger than 25 gig mailboxes.
Right.
You might need to send messages larger than 25 megs.
Right. And those are things that you can enable in Exchange Online on premise that you can't in Exchange Online. You can't change the message size, maximum limits. You can't change some other functions. So.
And I think that we covered everything we're going to cover for this module. So we'll see you guys in 10 minutes. For the
we have a meal break. We have a meal break.
So in about an hour.
About an hour.
We'll return for the
probably like 1:15 back on schedule.
Closer to 1:15 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
An hour
and 15 minutes. Sorry guys, the studios run the show. We're just sitting here trying to hang out. About an hour and 15 minutes, we'll be back for the seventh module. That should be the deployment and migration of Exchange Online. Thank you.
Thank you.